like to welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit Howard Tischler. We're going to be talking about senior financial exploitation. He's co-founder and CEO of Eversafe, which monitors bank and investment accounts, credit cards, and credit data. He founded the company after his mother was financially exploited, and his research revealed no viable solutions to protect seniors from this devastating experience. He serves on the advisory boards of LendKey and the George Washington University School of Engineering and Applied Science, and was inducted into the George Washington University Engineering Hall of Fame in 2012. Howard, welcome to the Caregiver Summit.
Thank you, Anthony.
All right, let's just jump in. So some people may not realize that financial exploitation can come from those who are most trusted in our lives. Could be family members, doctors, and other professionals. Can you tell us both from your personal and professional experience what you have seen?
Certainly family is the largest source of financial exploitation for a wide range of reasons. People may be caregivers and they feel like they should be paid more than what other people are receiving because they're not the caregivers. It may be because they feel that, well, I'm going to inherit the money anyway, so I'm just going to take it early to help a child go to school, or I have overdue bills, whatever the case may be. So family ends up being a large source of exploitation. There are advisors, there are lawyers that take advantage of people as well. But I'm going to tell a little story, and that is what happened with my mother.
Sure.
So I co-founded Eversafe with Liz Lowy, who is the former chief of the founder and former chief of the Elder Abuse Unit in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. So Eversafe has a high degree of subject matter expertise. But I'm going to talk about what happened with my mother, because it was a common type of scenario where a telemarketer called my mother and sold her an auto club policy. Only problem was she didn't own a car at the time, didn't have a driver's license, and was legally blind. And this was a large national company, and it was a large national company that she did business with. So that's a different type of, let's say, trusted source, right? It's a company that you've known, you believe in, but she was starting, we guess, to suffer from some mild cognitive issues. And therefore, she agreed to this $80 a month. So you may say $80 a month, big deal, right? But it was a big deal, because from there, we believe she got onto a sucker list. And other telemarketers called her and sold her inappropriate products. As a result, she fell behind on her credit card bills, late payment fees, high interest rates. She stopped paying on her long-term care insurance, which would end up costing the family a large amount of money once she needed that type of long-term care. From there, she took money out of her annuities early and paid penalties because she was withdrawing money early from her annuities. And last, she didn't want to be a burden to the family. So she talked to a friend about coming in and helping her pay her bills. And when that friend came in and helped her pay her bills, the friend wrote herself a check. Jeez. Every week. By the time I found out about it, her lifetime of savings was depleted and she had large bills that remained to be paid. And it's interesting. I didn't find out about it, or my brothers and I didn't find out about it, until about a year and a half after it started. When I took my mother to my niece's graduation, and my brothers and I started to notice that she was having some trouble with her memory. And we said, Mom, maybe we should get somebody in to help you a couple hours a day. She lived in South Carolina. I lived in Maryland. So miles was an issue. My brother lived in Arizona, and I had one brother who was in South Carolina. But when I took her back and started interviewing aides to come in, credit card bills started showing up, $8,000, $10,000. And when you're living on a fixed income from annuities and Social Security, those are significant. So I started to kind of peel the skin away from the onion and look at what was on those credit card bills. And there were all of these recurring charges that were just eating her savings alive and building up those bills. And hence, that was when I contacted the companies that had sold their inappropriate products, and they were willing to give back 60 days worth of charges. They had the digital recordings of my mother saying yes, but because they had her credit card number, she would say yes. She wouldn't even have to give them her credit card number because they already had it. The financial advisor did not contact me to tell me that she was taking money out of her annuities early. And the financial advisor knew me. He knew me because when my mother set up those annuities, she brought me in. We physically went and visited the financial advisor and set those annuities up. When I talked to him afterwards, he indicated, well, you know, she said she needed to pay bills. It seemed reasonable. I couldn't contact you because of privacy. But my feeling is he could have said, hey, why don't you come in with your mom and let's have a discussion. So at any rate, that's the story. It's a little bit long, but it really is about becoming a caregiver. And that is where EverSafe was born.
Yeah. And you know, financial exploitation takes many forms. And I'll just relate a quick thing about my mother-in-law who passed in January. My wife spent basically all of last year up in Philadelphia area with her. And, you know, one of the things she noticed was the amount of small little checks that she was writing to direct mail solicitations. And a lot of it was based on, and again, this goes to culture and generational, that because the direct mail was personalized, it said dear and a first name, she thought truly that they knew her somehow and she felt obligated. And so my wife had to spend untold hours just, well, first going through and getting rid of some of this stuff, but then convincing her mother. And even after she passed, she was still getting tons of mail. We have the mail transferred and down here, and it's still trickling down to a small few. But she was on a lot of lists and felt obligated and was writing those small checks. So what other forms, you know, common frauds are committed by strangers, professionals, and family members?
Well, I'm going to start with something a little bit different. And that is that the things that can happen to people of any age also happen to seniors. So when there are data breaches, that can impact the seniors as well. And a lot of seniors and their family will say, well, my parents or my grandparents are not online, so therefore a data breach doesn't affect them. The fact of the matter is that most data breaches do not occur because you are online, but because the company that is breached is online. So let's take the Equifax breach as an example. Over half of all Americans, including over half of seniors, were impacted by the Equifax breach. Most seniors already have a credit report because they've lived the life, they've gotten credit cards, they've gotten mortgages, car loans, etc. So their information is exposed as a result of the data breach. And they don't realize that they are at risk just as much as, let's say, a millennial or someone a little bit older who is online all the time. So I'm going to start with that. It can happen to people of any age. When you talk about seniors, one of the things you hear about is the grandparent scam. That seems to get a lot of attention. And the grandparent scam happens when somebody calls and pretends to be a grandchild. And they say, you know, I was in an accident, I'm in jail, don't tell mom or dad, please, I need for you to wire me $5,000 for bail so that I can get out. Grandparents want to be close to their grandchildren, so they comply with the request. And that's a real issue. One way to help stop that is to make sure that you don't put personal information out on social media. They get a lot of their information off of legitimate websites. You can go to legitimate websites where it will say who everybody is in your family. So you want to opt out of those types of things. But it can also happen on social media. A grandparent goes up on Facebook so that they can communicate with their grandchildren, and there's a lot of personal information that goes out there. There's also the sweetheart scam, where somebody is lonely, a stranger gets involved in their life and pretends to really care about them, maybe even marry them, and then the sweetheart starts to take advantage of the older person. They're also particularly susceptible to the lottery scams. whether that be Jamaican Lottery, whether it be the Nigerian Prince, whatever the case may be, that they tend to believe that this is their opportunity to get a lot of money, and they're asked to pay, let's say, taxes up front, and they start sending money, and it will evolve into thousands of dollars. Start small. These guys are good. It starts small and it grows from there. They're also questionable investments. They may be, we see sometimes penny stock brokers, the equivalent of penny stock brokers, will get seniors on the phone and start selling them, you know, lots of shares in a penny stock that they believe is going to go out the roof. But those are just some examples. There are many, many more, but that gives you an idea of the types of things that can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the impact of financial exploitation on older adults?
Well, there's the obvious one. They lose money. You might be surprised to hear that the average victim loses $120,000.
Wow.
And that number comes from AARP. It is a large number. And the other thing you may not realize is that when the senior is exploited and the senior loses $120,000, the caregivers for a victim also lose about $36,000 on average. So it's a significant impact. There's also a huge financial impact on the family. So I'll go into the example of my mother again, where it costs us far more than the $120,000 on average, because my mother's health declined rapidly. And this is quite frequent with people who are financially exploited. Liz would see it in the DA's office. People come in, they've been exploited, their health declines rapidly, the mortality rate goes up significantly. And what happened with my mother, and I didn't learn about this until later, is that after I talked to her about being exploited, her health declined. It was trip to the hospital, trip to rehabilitation, back home. Eventually, it became trip to the hospital, trip to rehabilitation, and into assisted living. Well, if you've ever been involved in paying for assisted living or a nursing home, those costs are significant. And they can go up to $80,000 a year, $100,000 a year, depending upon how much care the individual needs. So it's not just the residential fees, which might only be maybe $5,000 a month or $6,000 a month. It depends upon what part of the country you're in, but the type of care that the individual needs. And those costs mount significantly. And then the other impact to the caregiver, obviously, is as they have to take care of their older relative, they may miss time at work, they may have to quit their job. I was a division president of a large company. I had offices in 6 different cities around the US. I had to resign from my job so that I could help take care of my mother, because she was in South Carolina, I was in Maryland. It was hard to do my job with businesses in 6 different cities and take care of my mother in South Carolina. This happens frequently to people where it has a huge impact on their employment.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And couple of our summit experts are going to be talking about the workplace and some of the implications. And while the face of caregivers are changing, they're still predominantly middle-aged females. Though we know as sons, I was a caregiver and so were you. So what are some of the ways that family caregivers and older adults can protect themselves?
So what I'm going to go to, you talked about this mail that was coming to, I think it was your mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that the post office offers now is the ability to actually get your mail scanned and emailed to you in addition to the physical delivery. Not many people know this, and it's not available in all regions of the country, but it's one way that you can help monitor the mail while your mother or grandmother, father, grandfather are continuing to receive their physical mail, so that you can kind of have an idea of what's coming in, and then you can have a discussion with your older relative, with your loved ones. Education is also important. So it's important to talk to them about what are the things that can happen. And don't put it in the context of you're getting old and this is going to happen to you, but put it in the context of what can happen to yourself as well as what can happen to them. So that it's kind of a peer-to-peer relationship. Parents are used to taking care of you. They're not used to you taking care of them. So if you can put it into more of a peer-to-peer type of relationship, you're going to be much more successful in educating them about the types of things that can happen. Another way that scams come in is via the telephone. And many older people still have a landline. They may have a cell phone. So one of the things that we recommend is they get a service that blocks robocalls. And there's a couple of them out there. Two that we look at are one's called Robocall and the other one is called Guestmail. And that can be very beneficial to blocking a lot of these initial calls that come in, as well as calls for medic alerts, things like that. Telemarketers will use robocalls in order to get to you. Also, if an older relative needs help with bill paying, you can get a bill paying service. One of the ones that we suggest to people is a service called Silver Bills. And what they will do is they will look at the charges that come in on the credit cards, verify them, and then make sure that the bills are paid on time. And then you should also monitor. And it's not enough to just look at, you know, credit card bills, bank statements, investment statements once a month. But what we recommend is that you monitor them on a daily basis. Because if people start to take money out of an account, it'll start small, but it will accelerate over time. So by the time, especially, I think you mentioned that your mom or your mother-in-law lived in Philadelphia, you have to worry about the miles. In this day and age, a lot of people don't live right next door to their parents or their grandparents. They live a lot of miles away. For me, I lived in Maryland. My mother was down in South Carolina. Even though I would go to visit once every 4 to 6 weeks, it's not the same as being there every day or every other day. So we recommend that you monitor. And obviously, I'm CEO of Eversafe, but we recommend that people use something like Eversafe in order to monitor. We look at the bank accounts, investment accounts, retirement accounts, credit cards, the credit report, and not just the credit report, but we look at the underlying credit data. We look at any changes to depository accounts. An address that changes on a savings account can be significant because all of a sudden that's going to be redirected. We look at the national change of address database. You talked about your mother-in-law getting these solicitations, but I bet you didn't know that it is very easy to go to the post office or to even do it online to change the address. And all of a sudden these bank statements with the canceled checks that have the routing numbers and the account numbers on those checks can all of a sudden be used to empty an account. So it's important to monitor these things every day. And Eversafe is a personalized solution. So we don't just alert people to what happens to John and Jane Doe, but we look at historical financial behavior. And from that, we look at today's activity, compare it to how they've behaved historically, and identify erratic activity, and then send those alerts out, not just to the senior, but to what we call a trusted advocate. The trusted advocate can be the caregiver. We recommend that there be more than one in case family is exploiting the senior. It can be a professional. It can be the lawyer, accountant, financial advisor, or whoever that may be. Or if there's more than one child, have both children or all three children get the alerts. Transparency can be a deterrent in and of itself. And then lastly, if they do find suspicious activity, they can contact us and we will help them with remediation. And that unit is overseen by, I mentioned Liz Lowy, who's a former prosecutor. She ran that elder abuse unit in Manhattan for almost 20 years. And she is one of the foremost experts in the country. So those are the types of things that you can do. Keep an eye on things. That's what we want to stress.
Sure. And I just, for point of clarification, when people get alerts, how are those alerts received?
So the alerts can come either via email. text. We have an app, so there's an EverSafe app that runs on an iPhone or an Android device. And lastly, we'll also deliver alerts via the phone, because we do have some people who get signed up who don't have any access to a computer or don't use a computer. So through the phone, we can contact them, let them know there's an alert, and then they can talk to an advocate about what does the alert mean, or they can contact us, what does the alert mean, and we can go through what can be done to either resolve or remediate whatever that issue may be.
Great. Well, Howard, this has been very enlightening. I've learned a few things myself about some exploitations and how to prevent them. So that's always a good thing. This is a topic that's not going to go away. It's only going to increase as the population continues to age. And so I just wanted to thank you for being on the Caregiver Summit.
And thank you for having me, Anthony. This is an important topic.